one of the first questions I say when I'm working with someone is, so that voice, I might say, hey, what are some of the voices, the thoughts that come into your head when you're showing up in front of the board meeting, you know, and these are even seven-figure exec people sometimes, you know. So what are some of the like thoughts that you have? And they'll tell me. And I'll say, so that voice that's telling you you're not good enough or shut up, you don't deserve to sit at the table or whatever they say the voice is. So is that voice against you or for you?
Hello and welcome to Self Talk. I'm Rachel Astarte. Today, I am greatly privileged to have with me Michael Ian Cedar, who is a leadership and life coach, facilitator, keynote speaker, who helps clients bring their professional and personal lives into alignment. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a privilege to be here and to with you and the listeners as well.
Yeah, thanks for showing up. It's a beautiful way to start the new year.
Isn't that over 50% of the game, just showing up?
It is.
I heard something really cool the other day. Kung Fu. Do you know what the exact translation of Kung Fu is?
I do not.
I just learned this yesterday. The exact translation of Kung Fu is hard work. Not work hard work, right? And so you could be a karate master and know the technique, but a kung fu master is someone willing to do the hard work, willing to look in the mirror, willing to see your flaws. And so showing up is the kung fu, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's fantastic. Yeah.
So kung fu, kaya. All
right. Yes. So I'd love for you to just share with the listeners, how you got into your field, and I know a little bit, but I'm going to kind of start you off with the most interesting part for me reading about your background is that you had some kind of awareness at the age of 8. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I'll start there. That's a fun place to start. So when I was younger, I grew up in a really interesting town. And I don't know if the town's as interesting now as it was then. I'm sure it is, but it had a really neat dynamic that I saw over time start to change. But I grew up in a small town called Roosevelt, New Jersey. And there were 8 kids in my graduating class. Like, it was super artsy, lots of different kinds of media artists. Ben Shaw came from there. Stephen Martin, musicians, recording studios. I grew up in a recording studio. My father is a musician. And I had this background of sort of like, I don't know, do something that's cool, man. You know, like that was sort of my background, as a kid. And this community where you just walk into people's homes, even if you didn't know them, you'd just be like, hey, what are you having for dinner? It was just this weird little interest. I don't want to call it weird. It was this really unique community. But I realized my parents, teachers recognized I wasn't learning the same way my other classmates were learning. And so there was this real struggle for me in school from a super early age, and I didn't communicate the same way my friends my age were communicating, and I thought something was wrong with me. Now, come years later, I mean, whether this is true or not, I demonstrate all the symptoms of someone with dyslexia. But back then, that was this weird little thing that nobody really understood. You know, I wasn't writing backwards, I just took me longer to read. So learning for me, receiving the world wasn't the same as the other 7 kids in my class, right? And so it was just hard, and thought I was broken, and everyone tried to figure out what was wrong. And just turns out I just didn't want to read a book. I'd rather talk about the book than read about the, like, you know, now I look at it and I go, wow, that's easy. So anyways, sounds like I'm going on a tangent, but it ties in together. So my dad, awesome human being, didn't know what to do with me. And so he did what he knew. And he gave me a McDonald's apple pie if I would sit in the car and drive around listening to personal development cassette tapes.
Wow.
Brian Tracy, Tony Robbins, Earl Nightingale, right? And so here I am, an 8-year-old or even younger, possibly, sitting in a car with my dad listening to Jim Rohn, the best, the greats, right? And to me, this is just normal. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is what you do as a kid,
sure,
right?
Sure.
You ride around with dad.
Yeah, why not?
And so what I didn't recognize at the time was I was surrounding myself with mindsets that are very empowering, right? Mm. And though it still took me a very, very long time in my life to accept or just figure out, like, oh, you're not broken. You know, man, I wish someone told me that earlier, but, yeah, you know, here we are. And so that's where I started to learn to me, the nomenclature was you do what you love, you pursue your life's purpose. And so in middle school and high school, as friends were starting to get jobs, I thought it was cool that they worked at the pizza parlor or things like that. But when they complained about it, to me, it didn't make sense. I said, well, don't you love it? And they're like, no, I'm doing it for money. And that never made sense to me. And it didn't even register to me until I was in my 30s, where I was introduced to a different mindset. I was introduced to a different culture and really articulate, because they were people, all these people were the greats of communicating this mindset. Mm-hmm. And so though my background looks on paper totally wild and non-connected, it's 100% connected, and it's about helping other people learn about themselves throughout mm-hmm. my entire life. So that's where at the age of 8, I was like, I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to help people live their life's purpose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you have a website called thelegacyofyou.com. How did that come about?
You know, 10 years ago, again, like many people that probably are listening now, I'm going to call it like this, but I don't think the lay folk are listening to this podcast. People willing to do the work, you know, are listening to this. I was, even though I had this mindset of like, you do what you love, you know, sort of like Pippin, you know, in the Broadway musical Pippin, I was like, yeah, well, got to find my corner of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the words to describe, you know, I knew intrinsically I wanted to help people pursue their life's purpose. But without context, I didn't know what it was. And I just knew one thing was constantly recurring. And it was this idea of leave the world better than you came into it. Or, mm-hmm. you know, there should be a hole in the universe, the fabric of the world, when I'm out of this body. And this was a very painful experience for me to figure out, well, what's the words to put behind it? And I still don't have the words, but I accept that I don't have the words.
Yeah.
You know? And so I came up with a company. I knew I wanted to create environments mm-hmm. and experiences that allowed people to lower their inhibitions so that they could show up, there's that word again, right, as their most authentic selves, whatever that means, because even in our most authentic selves, we still have the trauma and the PTSD.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And the ego wanting to drive things. But so that's where it came from. It was The Legacy of You. And the name stuck because the domain name was available. right. And I was like playing with all these things. And I just went, but I literally went, oh, The Legacy of You. And I remember going to the computer, typing it. I was like, there's no way that's available. And I was like looking around. I was like, purchase. Right. And that's how the name stuck. But it was it just came into my head one day. I think I was journaling.
Yeah. I went, that's a good way to get ideas, man. Your brain is open and you're just in a receiving mode. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of journaling. Always have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because it serves as the channel for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
it does.
So that's how the name, The Legacy of You, came about. And since the inception of the name of that 10 years ago, honestly, the work hasn't changed. I just gave it a vehicle. I gave it a container within the Legacy of You.
Yeah.
And in the Legacy of You, we now do the Gratitude Slam, which is a group on Facebook that is free. And it's how I offer my coaching services because I generally work in corporate America and as a coach. Not everyone is ready to or can afford that type of level. So the Gratitude Slam is my opportunity to coach for no money in very short bursts to lots of people at once. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the Life on Your Terms group coaching program as another entry point. We, produce live events, the Legacy Show. I produced traveling dance competitions with other people before that. And I'm not a dancer, but it was a way for people to use their bodies and their minds together. And so it's one of those things. It's nice to be able to go to bed at night and go, oh man, the day's over, and wake up in the morning and go, oh man, I get to do it again. And I feel very blessed that I get to do that.
Yeah. What are some common themes that you find people grapple with when they come to you? Yeah, either in the Gratitude Slam page or one-on-one when they work with you, or even with groups. What are some maybe obstacles that you find coming up a lot for people?
I'm going to tell that with a story. Mm-hmm. And it was like the antithesis of the epitome, not the antithesis, the epitome of like the kind of individual I coach. So I was coaching someone in big corporation, or I was assigned to somebody in a big corporation. So I hadn't even started. And they still give the coachee that in that organization the opportunity to do a chemistry session where they get to meet me and go, hey, is this the right fit?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a chemistry session with someone, and a gentleman comes up on the screen, and because it was Zoom, and he goes, and it was very mechanical in that first call.
Okay.
And he's a super high-level manager in pop culture world. Most people know his work. They might not know his name, but they know his direct work. They've seen it. And he just goes, I remember he was looking down at the table. Yeah. And he goes, hi, my name is, and my job is, and he goes, so today I dropped my 7-year-old daughter off at school. And I drove away and I realized I don't know what color dress she was wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks up at the screen for the first time. He goes, can you help me?
Wow.
Yeah, that one. And I don't have children, and that's intentional for me. You know, that we Lauren and I chose a child-free life. But man, did that hit hard, you know, for me. Like that was like, he reached through the screen and punched me in the chest.
How did you receive that? Yeah. What did that mean to you in terms of what he was really asking?
Yeah. And so the reason I told the story is my immediate answer was, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I can help you with that. Right. Mm. I didn't need to understand the context behind why he didn't know the color of his dress. Right. Because I, as a former true workaholic, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it's like the phrase in AA, if you spot it, you got it. Right.
Right,
I was like,
right.
I know that look. I know that tone of voice. I know that desperation. I know that I'm lost. Please help me.
Hmm.
So the reason I tell the story is because you said, what themes do I have coming up? And what I see is, now we're talking about a company here, but whether you are an artist, which we could define that so many different ways, but whether you're a creative visual artist or whether you are a business tycoon or you are a stay-at-home parent or you are a poet, it doesn't matter to me. The moment when the work becomes more serious than you, the moment that you fall, when you start to fall into the habit of this is the way you work or live or prove value to yourself, you've lost yourself, right?
Right.
And so the theme that most comes up is people I know exactly what I'm trying to say, but it's not coming out for some reason. Like, I'm not meant to say it the way that I want to say it academically. So I'm just going to riff with instinct on this.
Yeah, riffing is good. We like riffing.
Yeah, let's riff.
You come around to it.
So it's this idea of I am not what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This identity to who am I? Oh, man. I don't remember what movie it is, and I would love to know. There's a movie where a woman's child died and she goes, what's a mother without a child, right? Mm-hmm. And that was, and I saw that years ago. I don't even remember, but I remember that again. Wow, that's interesting. Look at the pattern, two children related things.
Yeah.
I don't have that in my
house. And you're child free.
And we're child free. Isn't that interesting?
It's just very interesting. We'll talk about that another time.
Very interesting. Tell me about that childhood. And I come from the entertainment industry.
Right.
That's my background, is Broadway tours and as a company manager and producing theater and different things. And so I say this because in the arts, people work so hard to get there.
Yeah.
And look what just happened with I know it sounds like I'm going on a tangent, but I'll bring it back around. But in what just happened with COVID-19 – most of my best friends, super high level people, lost everything
in
the world. And so the Life on Your Terms program actually was built because I had friends coming to me going, I don't know who I am without the work.
Right.
I can't even say it's because I'm not good enough. It's not there. So I've spent 30 years, 40 years, 50 years of my life doing this. I don't know who I am without the work. Right. And so same thing for your mother. Who am I if I'm not mothering? Who am I if I'm not creating? Who am I if I'm not making $1 million?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so many stories in corporate America of people taking second place, being second richest man in the world or whatever, and committing suicide. Right. So who am I not as first place? Who am I not as this? And so that's the theme. So that's why I'm tying it all back around.
I see that. Yeah.
The theme is the itty bitty shitty committee, right? Up in the head, right? Up in our mind, the internal critic.
Right.
The voice, the limiting voice, is how do we navigate that? How do we navigate? You should be working harder, right? People shooting all over themselves.
Yes. Yes. And I love that phrase. Don't shoot on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic. In fact, you've now beautifully segued into my next question, which is about that inner voice and about that voice that, when I speak with my patients about it, it's often, what did you hear growing up?
Yeah.
What you heard growing up is from your parents and, or your caregivers. And when you move out of the house, as you get older, you don't have those voices in your head anymore. So they become your voices and you begin to assume that they're your beliefs about yourself rather than understanding that this is patterning that you received from growing up.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how you work with the voice in the head.
Yeah. Before I do that, I want some clarification from you. I know you're a therapist. You're also a coach, right?
Yes, I'm also a life coach. Yeah.
So you walk both sides of that, and there's this really beautiful concentric area in the middle of that circle, right? And so I like what you said, because I'm not a therapist by trade. Looking at life, I go, that would have been a cool skill set to learn, but I don't have the interest in investing the time into that now. But I so respect that education and that background that you have on that, because I know that's a hole that's missing for me. And so a lot of times people come to me and they go, well, it's different between you and a therapist. And this is the way I define it. I'm curious if you.
Oh yeah, this is a great question. Yeah, I'd love to hear it. And then we'll talk about the voice in a second. This is a good one. Go.
Yeah, this is my, because it comes back to the voice. And
yeah.
Because of the way that you talked about the voice, about the patterns of the past, because I don't go far into the patterns of the past. So this is what I say, and tell me if I'm in the wrong direction, if I'm even saying the right thing to my potential clients or clients. I say, well, therapy is about the past and healing predominantly, and coaching is I am here and I want to get here. What's the gap in between? How big is that gap? That's my job.
Yep.
And a lot of times, the people I'm working with, either they already are, or I'll say to them after finding what's sort of surfacing for them, hey, if you combine this work here with me saying as a coach and the work with the therapist, that's a powerful 1-2 combination.
Yeah, it is. Yep, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I think that's pretty spot on. And, you know, and it has a lot to do with the timeline. There's yes. another beautiful way that it was described to me many years ago, which was a therapist. So here's your client. The therapist might stand behind the client and sort of, you know, in case there's someone to fall yep. back on. Yep. We do look yep. at the past. A life coach stands right aligned with the client or a little ahead.
I would just say, I'd say
a little ahead,
you know, steps ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. And saying, come on over this way. And I love that, you know, that idea of that, the gap between where you are and where you want to be.
Yes.
And that the life coach can help you to kind of bridge that gap.
Correct.
And,
yep.
And sometimes what I love about wearing the two hats for myself is some of my patients don't know, you know, they're not ready to make that leap.
Perfect.
And so then I say, well, let's look at why that is. And so then we do a little cleaning over here.
And generally, I'd say even 95, I feel comfortable saying 95% of the time, by the time someone gets to me, whether they chose to pick up the phone, because I do so much work where I'm giving my time. I always say my knowledge is absolutely free. It's the time people pay for, yeah. right? The exclusivity time of things. So that's why I like the Gratitude Slam. Like, I have a lot of friends in the industry say, like, you're putting in hours a week on that and with no compensation. I said, yeah, but that's what I do. Like, the money is not what I did. The money is the byproduct. So I go, my knowledge, I'm not going to withhold. And I have a lot of people. I had one staff member actually leave because they said, I can't work with you because you give away too much information. I was like, well, this is not the right fit because there's nothing I will, that would be mean for me to withhold. Yeah. In fact, you'll appreciate this. And we're going to go back to your question.
Yeah, here. Yeah. This is fun.
There was, I like tying it all together. I was looking for a coach once and I was highly recommended to the coach by somebody that I totally admire. So I went in for the consult and I asked some questions. She goes, well, I don't want to give away the store before we start working together. And I said, hey, thanks so much. This isn't right. I was like, yeah, if you're not willing to give me it all now, no way do I want to part with my money for that. So anyways, going back to this idea of the voice and therapy and the coaching.
Right.
Because you're right. Let's find the pattern. So I'm not clinically clinically equipped to actually find that out in a very scientific kind of way. Which is why I recommend, hey, maybe a therapist is right. Oh, this is what I was saying though, is I said, hey, you know, very rarely do people come to me. By the time they get to me, they've done the kung fu. They've done that hard work, right? The definition of kung fu literally translates to hard work. And they've done that work. And so by that point, they got a little bit of context.
Right.
I'm like, hey, I know these patterns I'm in. Because as a coach, it's not my job to tell someone what to do. In fact, I work in industries I know nothing about. Mm. And I think that makes me a better coach for them because I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm just here to help bring new perspective and clarity to the way you show up. Yeah. You know how to do your job. I don't.
Right.
So when it comes to the inner critic, when it comes to the voice.
Yes.
One of the first questions I say when I'm working with someone is, so that voice that I might say, hey, what are some of the voices, the thoughts that come into your head when you're showing up in front of the board meeting, you know, and these are even seven figure exact people sometimes, you know, so what are some of the like thoughts that you have? And they'll tell me and I'll say, so that voice that's telling you you're not good enough or shut up, you don't deserve to sit at the table or whatever they say the voice is. So is that voice against you or for you?
Mm-hmm.
And they always go, oh, it's against me. Actually, I had someone write me the other day, I want to address the evil voice, right? And I was like, oh, okay. and I just totally disagree. I don't see it as it's against it you. I see it as the voice is 100% for you. The voice is just trying to keep you alive.
Correct.
The voice is just Yep. Literally hundreds of thousands, if you, depending on how we want to go, millions of years of evolution said, oh, there's a kitten with really sharp teeth. Let's run from that, shall we?
Yeah.
You know? And so our brains haven't caught up to all of this technology and the phones and the Zooms and the headsets and the fact that we can do this without a tape recorder in the middle of the two of us, you know? And so, it's just trying to keep us alive. Now, it's doing it in a sort of mean way sometimes, but it's not trying to be mean. It's just what that voice knows.
Right.
And look, that voice is the limbic system, right? The voice is the primal brain, the lizard brain, whatever, you know, whoever you're reading that day, you know, name for the monkey brain. And it is primal. And so it's going to be a little more fight, flight, or freeze. And so what I love to do is I love to I think it's one of the most powerful things I do in the work I do. And it's so simple. It really is, but isn't the most powerful, the most simple most of the time. I want people to personify it. And I go, what's the name of the voice? It's like, what? Like, what's the name of the voice? And they're like, I don't know. You know, I'm like, it's not your name because it's not you.
Right.
I go, it's not your, well, it's my mom. I go, but it's not your mom.
Right.
So you, so I give them a choice. I said, you can call it the mom voice or the Janet voice, or you can just give it a whole name, but it's not you and it's not your mom.
Right.
It's the patterns. Like you said,
it's the pattern, pattern
that mom got there. Perhaps, you know,
there's no truth to it. Yeah.
There's, it's just the, I, the idea that pretty much, you know, the voices in our head are set at like 6 years old. That's scary. That's so scary. I mean, like, you know, but of course we don't have to live with those voices. We don't have to live with those messages. So I have them. I have I don't even want to call them clients because I do it on the gratitude slam. I might do it in Life on Your Trips, but I have the participant, you know, personify the voice. And so the number one attribute to living life on your terms is, can I stop the internal critic? Mm-hmm. So the name of my voice is Tweety, right? Like literally after the cartoon character, because my blankie growing up was Tweety. And when I am going to myself, oh, you're not equipped to talk to Rachel today, I'll go, hey, Tweety, what's this all about? What are you doing?
Yeah, talking to the voice is a big thing. It's so helpful.
Yeah, I'll just go, what is that? Well, it's just you don't want to look like an idiot. And then I have the choice to go, thank you, and have gratitude, right? I even have, it just happens to be here. I don't always have this next to me. I have my little gratitude rock that my wife gave me. And I can go, hey, thank you. You know what? This neurosis thing you got going on, Tweety, it's got us here. And it's got me in my relationship with Lauren. It's got me my coaching practice. It's gotten me the following 100% plus. So thank you. But this time when I'm talking to Rachel, I don't need you. Can you go in the corner with a box of Triscuits and a can of cheese and just do what you got to do? Mm-hmm. And Tweety's going to fight back and I'll be like, no, seriously, don't need you for this round. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for looking out for me.
Yes. Gratitude for the voice.
I'm driving the bus. You sit in the back and read a book because I'm, you know.
I always say that too. I say stuff like that all the time. And here's the thing. I still need Tweety. Mm-hmm. I need Tweety to go, hey, something seems wrong about this deal here.
Right.
And I go, what do you see wrong, Tweety? Mm-hmm. Well, the person didn't sign their name on the second page. Huh. That second page is the compensation page, right? Whatever it is. And so Tweety is the primal part that's not the logic center of the brain. So, yeah. So to make a short story shorter, just give people context that the voice isn't against you. Right. And to be able to identify the difference between the voice and your voice.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And Rachel, man, if we could teach that simple tool in kindergarten.
I was going to say elementary school, we should be teaching that. We should be teaching empathy and compassion. Oh. Learn how to work with yourself. And, you know, well, that's what we were talking about before we started the episode today about, you know, building the foundation of self and how important that is. And yeah, it needs to start early.
Yeah, it's. I just look at it. I know, again, this whole thing with kids coming back up. I know one of my main missions in life is to get this work into early education.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. I'm not doing it right now, and it feels right that I'm not doing it right now. I can't, you know, I just know that my intention is to get this to younger generations. Mm-hmm. Because by now, it's like, what, you know, okay, I'd love to get it into the teachers as well, but let me at least start with the younger, you know, let me start with the mind that's, because, you know, I guess why? Because at the age of 8 years old, that's when I was introduced to it.
Right.
And right. Though it didn't heal all my traumas or whatever we want to call them, mm-hmm. they were the toolbox I had. And I want to say this because I don't know your audience directly. You know, I've not sat down and had a cup of tea with them. I believe that I'm probably have the makings of clinical depression runs in the family. Mm-hmm. But I've never wanted someone to tell me if I am or not.
Yeah.
And I've not wanted to know. I'm like, it's an irrelevant data
point. It's a label. It's a label.
Right. It's an irrelevant data point. Because I have these moments where when people talk about clinical depression, I go, yeah, I get those dark, super dark moments like that that I can't justify for. But I love using the tools that I learned since I was 8 to go, what have I not learned yet that I'm feeling this? And so I just want to get this work to more generations sooner, quicker, faster, because I just – there's not a person that goes through the work I do who goes, why is this – why did it take me 50 years, 60 years to hear this? What? Yeah. And it's – and by no means, Rachel, am I taking credit for the work. Mm-hmm. This is not my work. I might have – made it into my art, but it's not, this is the work of people thousands of years ago. There's nothing unique about this work to me. I just package it in a unique way.
Well, I think of us more as facilitators.
That's exactly what I say. When someone thanks me for the work, I go, hey, thank you for acknowledging my role as a facilitator, but you did that MF
and
work.
Absolutely. Right. Because that, you know, we could do the same thing and it could also not work out for that person. I loved what you said earlier about, it went by very quickly, but the lessons that we are here to learn. That's what it was when you were saying, what have I not learned yet? That's beautiful.
When I'm in that place and I'm like, when I logically cannot justify for feeling like there's nothing that happened, everything's great, and I'm dark.
Mm-hmm.
That used to take me weeks, months, years, you know, to get out of. Now I just go, I don't know where I learned it, but I just go, what have I not learned yet that I'm feeling this way?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just sit there and I'll put it up and out, you know, and I'll just be like, I'm willing to listen. I don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not kidding. What took days, weeks, months to get out of, sometimes years, mm-hmm. 15 minutes.
Yeah. And I have a theory about why that is.
Yeah. I love to hear that.
When we go into a depressive state or we go into a state of panic or anxiety or anything like that, it's so unpleasant that the first thing we try to do is get rid of it. Do something else, focus on something else. You know, how many times I've heard the phrase, throw myself into my work, you know, so that I don't have to, and I'm just barreling through. What you did in that example was you dropped in.
It's a total drop in.
Mm-hmm. And so that you're not distracting yourself, you're actually working with the feeling, as unpleasant as it is. And what happens then is you've acknowledged what's happening. You've honored it by inquiring. And then you've cleared the channel so that you can receive the information you need to receive.
Yeah. And I want to wrap that one up in a bow because I love the way you said that. It makes me think of what you said. What you resist stays, right? Mm-hmm. And I choose to co-create with that feeling.
Yeah.
Because I've got to look at it as, I know I sound like an Instagram badge here, but I have to look at it and go, but there's a reason it's an Instagram badge, right? You know, but I've got to look at it and go, how is this an ally to me? Right. It's Einstein's quote of I forget what the quote is, but the most important decision you make is the universe hostile or friendly. Mm-hmm. Right? And yeah. I've got to look at it and go, what is it that I'm, help me. I feel it. I see you. I know you're there. What is it? And so I'm co-creating with it. I'm not resisting it. And so it's interesting because I never thought about it that way. That's what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. And I could be a super religious person and do that. I could be a super spiritual person and do that. Absolutely. I could be agnostic and atheist and do that. Yep. And it still effing works.
It's physics. It's superpositioning. It's superpositioning.
Ooh, I never heard of that phrase.
It's, you know, is it a particle? Is it a wave? Is it a particle? Is it a wave? Depends on when you look at it. It's both when you're not looking at it. You look at it and it becomes one or the other. So that's the Einstein thing. That's that, you know, and I'm a physics geek. So I love, we were talking earlier too about science and the science of what we do. But that's true. So when you see the world a certain way, when you choose to see it that way, you know, is the universe hostile or friendly? There you go. You're going to see it, the particle or the wave, you know what I mean? As you choose.
You know what's super fun about that is when we first hopped on this call, because podcast listeners won't know this, but I see you on video right now and you have pink glasses on. And the first thing that went through my mind is, oh, this will be fun. We're talking to someone who looks at the world, focuses through rose colored glasses, right?
It's a huge difference.
What's that?
It makes a huge difference.
And your glasses literally are rose tinted. So I said, oh, this will be fun. This is someone who actively chooses to wear rose tinted glasses.
And I don't care. That's right.
But yeah, you get what you focus on. You know, exactly. where attention goes, energy flows. You know, if I want to focus on the lack in my life, don't worry, no problem. I got you covered. I'll focus on that lack. I want to focus on what I have in my life. I'm a huge fan of the law of attraction. I don't necessarily agree with it in the same fashion that Rhonda Byrne wrote in The Secret.
Yeah,
she missed a few steps.
Yeah,
she missed a few. I'm not against it, but she missed a few steps. But the biggest thing that she did bring to mainstream was, oh, focus on crap, you get crap. Focus on good and it will come. And it's not magic. It's just telling the brain where to look. It's physics.
Yeah, it is physics. And that's and I'm glad you brought that up, because I always feel the need to chime in about intention and manifestation and the idea of the one issue I have with it is this idea that the universe will provide. And I like that idea, but what it implies is that we are separate from the universe, and we are not. And this is physics too. There is no separation between us and the divine, and us and the great mystery, and us and the stars and the planets. That's where we, and planets are stars anyway, but the idea that there isn't something out there that you're praying to or appeasing. Like if I think good thoughts, good things will come to me. They don't always. And the Buddhists talk about this too. And this is a terrible paraphrase, but it's not what happens to you. It's how you deal with it, which is basically the same thing. So yes, I may try to manifest $1 million. That could take me the rest of my life. Did I fail? No. But what did happen? What did I receive? What other wealth is coming to me?
One of my, when you say that in that way, it makes me think of the late Dr. Wayne Dyer. Mm. And I can't remember what video it was, but he talked about wizardry. Mm-hmm. And he talked about being a wizard. Wizards exist. And I think that's sort of fun to say because it's a little kooky, but wizards exist. And he talks about being a wizard is being able to conjure. Mm-hmm. And you can only conjure from present reality. So a wizard goes, I want a ham sandwich right now in front of me, right? Well, the wizard conjures the ham sandwich because he goes, well, what do I have in front of me right now? What is real and true? What is present for me to respond to and take responsibility for? A wizard takes responsibility, the ability to respond. Well, there's nothing in my refrigerator. So I must respond to the fact that there's nothing in my refrigerator.
Correct.
And yeah. I must find an alternate source to get the ham sandwich. And I can only, I have no idea why I chose a ham sandwich, but I can only, a wizard can only conjure based off of present reality and taking responsibility, the ability to respond to reality.
And that is the manifestation.
And that's the part that's missing in The Secret, where it says, yeah, but you got to do the work too. You
got
to do the
kung fu.
You got to do the hard work.
I think we can rest that point. That's awesome. I have a question for you because this is a show called Self-Talk. And so I would love to hear, what does the self mean to you?
Wow.
I said I wasn't going to stump you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. Well, you know what? I don't feel stumped. I feel that's a question. I'll give you an answer. Mm-hmm. It's a question that's
just for like, you. Your perspective.
No amount of words that I can give that would accurately state it. It's like talking about awareness of awareness. It's like I can't really talk about it. We just got to do it. Mm-hmm. The exact question is: what is self?
What does the self mean to you or for you? I mean, you can just from your own personal experience. I'm not asking you to answer.
Yeah. So I'll go. It's the combined experiences I've had to date in my life, compounded by what Jung would call my innate preferences, you know, my right hand, left hand, what is that called? Not dominance, predisposed. I'm going to say that a little more cleanly. So mm-hmm. my combined experiences in life, compounded by my predisposed mm-hmm. choices, my eye color, am I left-handed or right-handed?
Right.
Am I, you know, if we want to go there, am I an ENFP, an INFJ, whatever, you know, what are my preferences? So that is self. And out of that combination, that chemical, I'm going to call that a chemical combination. Out of that chemical combination is my life's work, is my life's purpose. Mm-hmm. My life's work is not a coach. My life's work is not a producer. My life's work, to me, the best words I can use to describe it is to free people, mm-hmm. to free people from the limiting beliefs in their head, to free people to pursue a life that belongs to them to pursue. So myself is combined experiences, traumas as in a biological set of bones and sacks and whatever, and just my innate preferences combined.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. And
great question, by the way. It's killer.
I find it to be something we should ask ourselves every day. You know, well, Sri Ramana Maharshi talks about that. Who am I? Who am I?
Deepak Chopra, I heard him on an interview the other week. He said, "Oh no, I don't," because he talked about who did you just say?
Sri Ramana Maharshi.
Yeah, I think he was talking about him, and he says, "Who am I?" Chopra goes, "Oh no, no, I don't ask myself anymore. Who am I?" He said, "I ask myself, what am I?" And wow, what a trippy exercise to change that context. What am I? I liked it. I liked it. It worked for me.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yep, we'll do that for another podcast. Yeah, thank you. That's beautiful. And so you mentioned the Myers-Briggs test. What are you? I'm an INFJ.
You are an ENFJ.
INFJ.
INFJ. I am
entirely introverted.
I identify as an ENFP.
Okay.
That because of some, I'll call it lowercase t, traumatic experiences in my life has really pushed me to lean into a very ISTJ mentality. And you want to talk about turning a diamond into coal with a massive amount of pressure. So I identify people that work with me, and I'm certified in MBT and Myers-Briggs. And I've originally got certified. Actually, I just want to share this because it's super fun. Yeah. So I got certified in Myers-Briggs because I was losing work because I was not certified in Myers-Briggs. Okay. So I did not go because I thought it was the bee's knees. Mm-hmm. And when I actually went and learned from the Myers-Briggs Institute themselves and had one of their master teachers teach me, I went, oh, not only do I think this is sort of fun, but I actually, when you actually learn about it from a master, I go, wow, I buy into this hook, line, and sinker. Yet one of my favorite books is Benjamin Hardy's Personality is Not Permanent, which is a book against the Myers-Briggs type indicator. And I agree with everything he says in the book. So for me, it's this labeling. You talked about labeling earlier. Idea of going, I am not an ENFP. I identify with the preferences of an ENFP. And so one of the senior coaches I work with that mentors me, he's like, there's no way, Michael, you're an ENFP. I go, I swear, I promise you, my comfort zone is in ENFP. I go, because of some experiences in my life, I've had to learn how to lean into S and T and J, and it was not a pleasant experience. Wow. For 15, 20 years of my life. But because of that pressure that I had put on me, because I was running multi-million dollar tours, generating probably billions of dollars a year at the end of the day, when you're working with that kind of energy at 25 years old, an ENFP, an NF does not do well in that environment.
No.
But I knew my life's calling was somewhere in there. So I had to go, what skill sets do I need to acquire? And it took me a long time to get there. So you're INFJ.
Yeah, always, ever since I was a child. My father was very big into Jung. And so I remember taking the test probably probably around 12 was when I took it the first time. Never, ever strayed from that.
Jung is, but even Jung says, Jung first of all says, you are your type, right? Period, from Kingdom Come. But he's also the one to say, but it's a lot more complicated than that.
It is more complicated. Because although I definitely wear the introvert badge, I consider myself an extroverted introvert, you know. Yeah, absolutely. So it's like there are, you know, gradients to everything. So this has been fabulous. I don't know how you feel about it, but I do unfortunately have to wind it up. Before we go, I would love for you to share. I did mention your website, thelegacyofyou.com. Anything else you'd like to share?
The website's predominantly a container. We really don't even use the name Legacy of You in most things that we do. So the number one place that people find me first is the Gratitude Slam. And if you go to, whether you Google Gratitude Slam, it'll still show up, and that's on my website, so it'll show up there. But on Facebook, just search for Gratitude Slam, two words. It's free to join. It's an intimate group right now. It's got 1,500 people, but we have an outstanding something like 85% participation rate in the group. So it's just really, it's an environment where people come to have a digital safe space to talk about themselves and to look for not the silver lining, not happiness, but to search for opportunities to find the positive in life. So I'd highly recommend people check that out.
That's on Facebook?
And it's on Facebook. And I actually have people who go, well, I'm not on Facebook, but friends have said to them, just create an account just for there. And I'm always honored by that.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah, I know. So I have probably a few dozen people who are there that only have an account for the group. And from there, should someone like the tone of what I'm presenting, then there are other opportunities to work in group coaching or one-on-one coaching. But again, I generally do that in the corporate setting, but there are other opportunities. But it's not that the Gratitude Slam is not there for the mechanism of capturing money. It's because that is my life's purpose of to help free people. And that is a vehicle in which I do it. So Gratitude Slam.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for being on Self Talk. This, again, is Michael Ian Cedar. You know where to find him now. Find him on the Gratitude Slam on Facebook. And thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you. It was an honor to be here and seriously a privilege to serve the listeners that are checking it out.
Thanks.